This work is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial License. This means that you may download and adapt the work for non-commercial purposes, but you must credit the original author. All use and versions of this material should be attributed. Please cite this work as Open Lives Project 2012, an open collection of research data and teaching materials relating to Spanish migrant stories, JISC.
¿Vale?
¿Sí?
Vale. No, sí.
Uy, que así, ¿no?
Sí. Baja ahí.
Ahí luego.
Un poco más, aquí. Ahí. Vale. Vale. Cuando queráis.
We're back. So, we were in Marseille, yeah? And you were talking about the American Friends Service Committee,
yeah,
that was looking into...
Yeah, the Quakers.
The Quakers
of Philadelphia.
The Quakers. I think my last question was, how did you feel after 5 years away from Asturias, from your family, your home?
Well, you know, I don't think I had any definite feelings. I was just going along with whatever, you know. I was kind of young, so...
Had you made friends by this time?
Oh, yes, I had friends in the colonies, you know. But we moved, you know, each time we moved, there were different children there. So, you know, I couldn't keep any friends for a long time, you know. Every place, like I said, I moved maybe 4 or 5 times, and just different children, different group of, you know, and I had friends there, but then I lost them, and you know.
And by this time, you were about 12, you spoke French?
Yes, yeah, I spoke French, but not anymore.
Not anymore?
Not
don't
anymore.
You remember anything?
No.
Nothing? Can
no.
You say anything in French?
No.
Je m'appelle...
Parlez-vous français?
Repeat it, please. Do it again, please.
Parlez-vous français?
Can't you say, my name is Corsino and I'm 12 years old?
No, not in French.
Je m'appelle... Do you remember the French school and the things that you learned there?
Well, didn't really go a long time to any one school, you know. I guess the most time I went to French school was in Écully, where we all went walked to the town nearby in Écully to French school, you know, and what I remember the most about that school was not what I learned, but a happening there, you know, it was winter time, and of course there were Spanish students with my group, and most of the kids were French.
Mm-hmm.
It was winter time, and got into a snowball fight with some of the French kids, you know, throwing snowball, and I was the only Spanish one throwing snowballs, and all about 4 or 5 French kids, you know, and there was only one that was my size, you know. So I got mad. I had a temper, and I got mad because I was losing, you know, because I was only one of against 4 or 5. So I rushed to the other kid and I pushed him, you know, and the teacher was looking, and she saw what happened. And she came over and grabbed me by the hand and took me inside and made me stay inside during the recess. We were doing recess. But
how did you get on with the French children?
The Spanish children did not really associate with the French children too much in school.
Mm.
At recess, the Spanish children would play by themselves, and the French, you know, and they didn't associate very much. I mean, we didn't get along bad, but we just didn't associate very much with the French children. We had some games. I would play with some kind of Wessel's bones, you know, and we threw them, and, you know, I don't know what they call it, but
a la taba, ¿juegas tabas? A la taba.
That's what we did at recess, but it was just the Spanish children and, you know, not the French children.
Do you remember becoming aware of the Spanish Civil War having ended at all? Did
vaguely,
anybody tell you?
Well, vaguely, you know. I remember that must have been about 1939 or somebody mentioned it, you know, but that's, to me, it did not make too much difference, you know.
Any of the children, did they start going back?
Yes,
did
yes,
you notice
yes,
that?
Yes. Yes, first time I remember when we were in Écully, near Lyon, must have been winter time, and must have been, obviously, pretty close to 1939, a little after the war was over. Mm-hmm. They had a cart that was pulled by a donkey, and they put a lot of children's suitcases on it, then we walked. The cart was pulling the suitcases of the children that were going back to Spain. And even those that were not going back to Spain, we all walked together to the town, you know. And because those that went back to Spain, they left, and then the rest of walked back to the colony, you know.
Did you wonder why you weren't going back?
No. See, nobody explained anything to me. They didn't ask me anything. I don't remember anybody, any of the adults, asking me where I thought my home was or anything. You know, they only went by what was on the paperwork, official paperwork. They didn't ask me anything. They didn't ask me if I wanted to come back or if I could find my home or anything. They didn't tell me anything.
And you didn't ask either.
What?
You didn't ask anybody.
No.
Okay, so how did you leave Marseille? What happened then?
Well, first time I realized there was something going on is that the colony I was a little distance from Marseille. And two men came and picked me up in a car, and we went to Marseille itself, and we went to before a judge, and because they needed some birth certificate, you know, and I didn't have no paperwork, you know. So we went before a judge, and there was two guys that testified that they knew my family. Obviously, they didn't know my family, but they had to testify for that they knew my family and I was born in a certain place and my name, you know. And so they drew up the paperwork so I could, you know, they could put me on the boat, you know. They need some kind of like a birth certificate, you know.
Did they explain to you that that's what they were going to do?
No, I didn't know that what was going on, you know. But this is just short time before we got on the boat. For some reason, when you're very young, the grown-ups don't explain why they do things to you, you know. They just do them, you know. They don't say, well, we're doing this because we're going to put you on a boat and go to the United States, you know. They didn't say anything, you know, mm-hmm. to me. Because some of the other children, they had older brrothers in fact, they had, some of them had parents in France, so the parents knew what was going to happen, and they told the parents. But me, they didn't tell me anything because I was alone.
You know. But you trusted these people.
Yeah. You know, there's nothing else I could do but trust them.
Mm-hmm. You know. So then they took you to the boat. Do you remember that day?
Yes. Yeah. They took me to the boat and. I don't remember the name of the boat, Now, some of the other children that came on one of the other boats remember the name of their boats, because they most of them were older, a little older. And of course, some of them had parents that stayed in France, so they knew what boat, but I don't even remember the name of the boat that I was in, the French boat. It was a French boat, you know. But they put me on the boat, and we sailed, because it was summertime, we sailed close to the coast of Spain, close enough that we could see the beaches of Spain. And I think the reason they close to, there was war going on, against Germany. Of course, by that time the Germans had taken all of France over, or most of France over, except the southern part. But we stayed close to the Spanish coast. And what I remember about that, one morning we could see the beach, very bright, like a gold beach, you know, near Spain, you know. And that's when I started thinking that I wish I were back in Spain.
Because you know it was Spain.
Oh yes, we knew it was Spain. By that time, I had been in school, so I knew a little bit of geography, you know. And of course, some of the old children were older, and they knew, you know, we knew it was Spain, or we could see Spain, you know.
And do you have with you any suitcase or something?
A what?
Any suitcase or something?
Suitcase? Very little. Because I didn't have, you know, I didn't own very much, but we could, I think we had a little suitcase of clothes, you know, but, and I had a little notebook with addresses, you know. I had the address of that Ascension, the lady, you know. I had her address. But yes, we had a little suitcase. So we went from Marseille to Oran in northern Africa, I think it's Algeria. Mm-hmm. And from there, we didn't stay in Oran, just overnight, I think. And then we took a train to Casablanca. Well, but that was a bad ride.
You didn't enjoy it.
Oh, no.
Why?
Nothing to drink. Hot. Nothing to drink on the train. You know, just our people. And each, of course, the train would stop at some little towns in North Africa, and everybody would jump off the train to try to get some water, you know. But everybody got very thirsty because it was summertime, hot, no water on the train, you know, just
all the children from the boat were taken to Oran by train, from Oran to Casablanca by train.
Yes, a my boat. There was the other group of children that went 1 month before. They did not go to Oran and by train to Casablanca. The children that came on the first boat 1 month before, they went straight from Marseille to Casablanca by boat.
And these were Spanish children, Asturian children. Where were they from?
Oh, Spain, but not all from Asturias. They were, you know, all parts of Spain. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a lot of Asturian children, but there were children from Barcelona and Madrid and all kinds of Spain, you know, mm-hmm. all parts of Spain.
And what happened when you got to Casablanca?
We only stayed there one night. We stayed there one night, and the next day they put us on a Portuguese boat. And the Portuguese boat, I found this lady had come from Portugal, Lisbon, where they had a lot of Jewish children. But see, they were evacuating Jewish children too, but they were first the Jewish children were taken to Spain and then from Spain to Portugal.
From Portugal,
they loaded, they were put on a boat, and that went to Casablanca, from Lisbon to Casablanca. So by the time we got on the boat, there was a lot of Jewish children already there. In fact, there were more Jewish children than Spanish children. Mm. Because I think there were only 17 on that boat, 17 Spanish children. And the first boat, I think there were 23. So we were put on the boat, the Niasan, they call it the Niasan, the Portuguese boat. And off we went to
America.
To America. We landed in Bermuda first. And,
have you ever returned to Casablanca? Or?
No. I never been back to France. No. Some of the other children went back to France later because some of them left their parents in France. So later, some of them went back to meet their parents, you know, but I had no reason to go back to France, you know.
Would you like to?
Would I like to? Well, the only thing I would like to do is go back to some of the counties I was in to see what they look like now, you know. But as far as people, you know, I have no reason to go back to see anybody in France, you know. Just the places I were, just curiosity what they look like, if they're still there, you know, but that's the only reason I would, you know, I want to go to France.
And when you watch on TV images of France or even Casablanca or Oran, do you remind the places where you've been?
Well, yeah, but they never show the places I've been. I mean, the colonies are no longer there, you know. They were just temporary colonies for children.
Do you feel that you have any special connection with France, with Marseille or Lyon or Paris or Casablanca? Or?
No, not particularly. I really did not enjoy my life in France very much. I really, except for curiosity, I would like to go see where I was, see if they're still there, but it's nothing like I wanted to come to Asturias, you know.
Do you remember the journey on the boat to the U.S.?
Oh, yes.
How long did it take?
Well, we left Marseilles about the 6th of the month, and we finally got to Baltimore, United States, by the 30th of the month. You know, so it took almost about 3 weeks.
What was it like?
The boat
journey, yeah.
It wasn't bad. I had a lot of fun, actually, because I used to go down to the kitchen in the boat, and they were Portuguese men, you know, because the Portuguese boat, but they knew Spanish, they could understand Spanish, so we could talk, and I'd help peel potatoes and stuff like that, and they would give me eggs, raw eggs, not cooked eggs, but raw eggs, you know, and I'd take them, and later on in the day, I'd break a little end of the bag and do raw eggs, you know. But I thought that trip was pretty good.
Did you have a cabin this time?
No, it wasn't a
altogether.
Yeah, they had a big area with the bunk beds, but there's no separate cabins, no. Mm-hmm.
And who looked after you? Who was in charge of the children?
Well, there were two adults, and they were from this American French Service Committee. You know, I think it was a man and a woman, and they kind of looked for us after it, but we could do almost anything we wanted to do on the boat. You know, we could run all over the boat.
What nationality were they? Were they American, the
carers? Well, because I didn't know at the time. I found out later that one of them was actually a German.
Okay.
You know, and I think the other one's American. But I think one of them was a German.
You remember the names?
Not. I think I have it in a paper someplace, but I don't remember it in my mind, no. And I, at the time, I didn't know the names. No. I just found out their names later from their... I did a lot of research after, you know, just about... Started about 5 or 6 years ago, I started researching. And that's when I found out their names, but I don't remember them now in the book. I'm sure I got it in a piece of paper someplace, you know. Because out there, about 5 or 6 years ago, when I started researching, I wrote to the American Friends Service Committee and got as many records as they let me have, you know, and so I still got the mm-hmm. whatever they sent me.
Do you remember arriving in the U.S.? You said you arrived in Bermuda first?
Yeah, I remember arriving there. Yeah, we landed in Bermuda, and we only stayed there one day, but they took us off the boat to for having a picnic on that little island. There's a little island, and they took us for a picnic and for one day on that island, and then we put it back on the boat, and then went back to get on board, and we went to Baltimore.
Maryland. And what were your first impressions of the U.S.?
Well, everything was strange, you know, just it was all different than France. But our boat went to Baltimore, but the first group a month before, they went to New York City, you know, they took us off the boat in Baltimore. Again, they gave us some refreshments or something to eat. And they took us to some camp close to New York City. I don't know where it was. I don't know. I knew it was close. But it was a camp where they had American children, too. And the way they taught us English is that they had one American boy, in my instance, one American boy, and paired with me, and he would try to, we'd go together, and he would try to teach me English, you know.
Like a buddy.
Yeah, that's right. And so that's how I learned my first English, is from this American kid that was there. You know, we'd go together and said, well, that's a car, or that's a tree, you know.
And you repeat it.
Yes. So we learn English pretty fast. Children learn a language very fast. It's not like old people like me. So we stay there about a week or two and learn a little English. And then they took us to the Bronx. The Bronx is a suburb of New York, a part of New York City, the Bronx. And
do you know if this place is still working?
No,
it's not anymore.
No, it's not working. No. That was a place operated by the Edwin Gould Foundation. And Edwin Gould was an American philanthropist, see? And this place was for orphan children and orphan American children. They put us there temporarily, and but it's not there anymore. It's something else. The buildings are there, but it's not for children.
Mm-hmm.
A few years ago, I researched it and I got in contact with a man that belongs to the Historical Society of the Bronx, and he told me that now it's an apartment building. It's not for children anymore, just an apartment.
But the foundation is still working. The foundation of
I don't think so, no. I think
you don't think? I think so.
The Edmund Gould Foundation. Yeah. I don't know.
I have seen their website.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I don't know if it's still working or not.
Have you tried to take some documents, or do you have any documents of this period of in New York? They wrote some they checked you in some way with name, nationality.
Well, yes, I have a few years ago when I started the research, I got in contact with the American Friends Service Committee, the Quakers, mm-hmm. Philadelphia, mm-hmm. and I got a list of the children that were in different boats, you know, and that's where I got most of my information. But I tried to write to the Edward Gould Foundation, and I never got any answer.
Nothing.
No information from the Edward Gould Foundation.
I will try to do it.
The what?
I will try to do it.
You will try to do it. Yeah. But I could never get any information from them. And like I say, that those buildings where we were, now they're apartment houses. Mm-hmm. You know? So, like all the information I got was from the Quakers, the American Service, American Friends Service Committee. They're still in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. You know.
I have a question. Sure. Going back to the arrival in the book, do you remember if there was on land any journalist or any television filming at you on the ship?
You mean when I got to America?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes, it was crowded, the port. They were expecting at you.
Oh, yes. Yes?
Yes.
Yes. We got... when I started my research, I gathered as much information as possible, and there's some Jewish organizations in New York, and they had a lot of records, and they had newspaper clippings, and they sent it to me, so the newspapers wrote articles in New York newspapers. Yes. In fact, our group, we've written a book, and in the back of the book, there's a copy of the newspaper clippings, I believe, I think the New York Times and articles about our arrival, and they have some photographs of some of the children, together on the boat.
Corsino, would you like to take a break?
Well, whatever.
how do you feel? I mean, we can take a break, sure.
Oh,
would you like that?
Yeah, that's okay with me.
Yeah? Okay. Because you've been talking a lot now.
Yeah, I'll get my...
So do you want to stretch? Okay, are we ready?
Vale, baja. Más. Tienen que aparecer las dos, ¿vale?
Vale.
Okay, then we have got to the States, and you were taken to a place in the Bronx,
yes.
In New York. What happened then?
Well, because we were in this Edwin Gould Foundation facility, mm-hmm. and over a period of time they were trying to find homes for the children throughout the United States. And so I stayed there about a year.
So you arrived in 1942, you remember?
Yes.
Which month?
Yeah, July.
July.
July 30. Mm-hmm. Before I arrived in I stayed there in the Bronx, in Edwin Guru Foundation, by a year.
What was that place like?
Well, it's you know, it had several buildings, two-story buildings, several of them, and it was just a place where it was almost like an orphanage, where they put children that had no families, but it was for also for American families, American children, you know, and it was just, for us, it was just temporary. We were not meant to stay there a long time, just long enough for them to find American families for us. And I stayed there about a year or so, and then a boy and I were sent to San Antonio, Texas. His name was Jose Fernandez. I'm a Fernandez too, but he was a Jose Fernandez. He was from Bilbao. And we stayed with a family in San Antonio for a month or two till this woman's husband was in the army, American army in Europe. And he didn't like the idea of two teenage boys staying with his wife. So they had to find another place for us. So they took me to another American family, and I don't know what happened to him. I never could find out what happened to him. And so I went to live with the Kivlins. That's how I got the Kivlin name. I went to live with the woman lady. Her husband was also in the army in Europe. So I stayed with her until he came back. The war was over in 1945, I believe it was. He came back, and they had difficulties with each other. They were going to get a divorce, so they had to do something with me. So they put me in an orphanage.
Again, yeah.
So they put me in an orphanage, and they eventually got a divorce. And I was in an orphanage, and of course I was going to school, to high school. And after I got out of high school, this woman had moved to Colorado, and she asked me if I wanted to go to college in Colorado. And I said, of course. So I went to Colorado, near Denver, the capital of Colorado. And but I didn't like college too much. Everything was strange, you know. I didn't know anybody in the college, so after 1 year, I left college. And I went back to San Antonio. And then started working. Then I met my wife.
But before that, sorry if I interrupt you. Before that, I mean, what were your reactions each time that you moved from one place to another, from one orphanage to with this guy from Bilbao? Then separated again.
Yeah.
Then, well, you know, what kind of reactions did you have at this time?
Well, you know, after a while you get used to it. After a while you don't expect to stay in one place. It's just something that happens. You don't like it, but yet again you're not mad about it. You're just used to it. You know, moving from one place to another.
Becomes normal.
Yeah, because I had been in five colleges in France, you know, and then so having to leave one family more, you know, it's almost like, you know,
Do you remember making friends in the U.S.?
Yes, yes. This woman, her name was Mildred Kivlin, that I lived with in you know, the one that her husband was in Europe in the army. Her sister lived right around the corner nearby, and she had two children, teenage children, a boy and a girl. And of course we became friends, very good friends, because I used to go play with them all the time. And even after I was put in the orphanage in San Antonio, on the weekends, I'd take the bus to their house so we could play together again. Mm-hmm. And we invented all kinds of games, you know. That
like
boy.
What? Huh? Like, can you remember one?
Oh, yeah, baseball games, cardboard, you know, with the dice and everything, all kinds of games. Baseball games, golf games, or you name it, we invented it for ourselves, you know. And we played. Every weekend, I'd go there with a bus and we'd play most of the day, you know, till it was time for me to go back to the orphanage, you know, and then get on the bus and ride back, you know. And because the bus only ran one time every hour. You know, there was an airport nearby, so the bus would go to the airport once an hour, so I'd have to catch the last bus and ride, go back to the orphanage, you know.
And what was life like in the orphanage?
Well, not too bad, because, you know, after a while you get used to living in orphanages, you know, so it wasn't bad, because I was going to high school, and by that time I was one of the older boys in the orphanage. Most of them were younger, and I was in high school, and I got to, you know, most of the time I was in school, and I played sports in school. And so I could do, I was pretty free to do what I wanted, actually. And I had a part-time job, too.
You know. Doing what?
Yeah, I was doing in the laundry.
Okay.
They had laundry, and that laundry there, they had a service where people would drive up and to with their dirty clothes, and we'd go take them out of the car and take them inside and write the ticket, you know, and then when they came back, we'd pick it up, take them back to the car, you know. I mean, I didn't iron or anything like that, you know. I didn't work inside. I was just helping customers take the laundry in and out, you know. And that was when I was in high school. After school, I'd walk from the school to the place, you know, because I had no car, no bicycle, anything. So I'd walk. So. So anyway, it was pretty good, you know, as orphanages go.
Did you have your own room there?
No.
You shared a big dormitory with other kids?
You never have your own room in orphanages, you know. Mm-hmm. It's always one big room for all the boys, one big room for all the girls.
Mm-hmm. Did you usually think why you were there? I mean, did you usually think about what were you leaving behind you?
Well, I don't know how to answer that, you know, because after a while you don't really think too much. You just take for granted what happens, you know. In my back of my mind, I always wondered what happened to my family in Spain, you know. But there was nothing I could do about it, you know, until much later. But after a while, you just take what happens, you know. That's just normal. Mm-hmm. You don't think, well, I feel sorry for myself or something like that. You know, I don't feel that way, you know. Mm-hmm.
But what about your reminds? Were still alive while you were growing as an American?
Well, I guess, you know, the only thing I can say is that I always wonder what happened to my family as I growing up, you know. I knew that someday I had to try to find them, you know. But I was too young. There was no way I could do anything then, you know, because the when I was living with the Kibrens in San Antonio, now she told me, the lady, her name was Mildred, told me that they had told her that my family had been killed. And I don't know why they told her that, but, and I had no way of knowing whether they had been killed or not, you know, so, but I knew that someday I had to find out.
When did you decide to do it? Long after.
Oh yeah, it was long after. In fact, it was actually after I retired the first time. That's when I felt that I had the time and enough money to I could make the trip, because I thought that the trip would be very expensive, and so I had to save money, and I didn't think I could. I think it probably was useless, but I didn't think I would find anybody over here. But it was something I had to do to come back and look.
So there was something inside you,
yes,
but you were going on with your life,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I always wonder what happened to my family over here. Because I didn't believe that everybody was killed, you know. Even though they told me that, I didn't see how everybody would have been killed, you know. They always were talking about Guernica and things like that, you know. But I thought there bound to be somebody alive over here. I just didn't know where, you know.
Okay, we need to change the tape, so we need to.